Hello and welcome to the 16th episode of Radio Thule, the Paranordic podcast from nordiskradio.se. My name is Lucas Lindgren, and with me today I have Finnish Andreas, Halvdan and Tarje, and a special guest, Swedish Andreas. Hello, guys.
Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hey, buddies.
And Swedish Andreas, I'm always a bit confused about your name, because you have like your regular Swedish name and then you have like an English version that's easier to pronounce for English speakers. I don't know.
No, I started out doing Andreas Johansson for my podcast as an alter ego. And then I got doxxed and I just kept the name because it's like an extra layer that the leftists have to climb through every time to find out who I am, if they don't know who Andreas Johansson is, or Andreas Holmvall, which is my real name. So, and I had been podcasting for almost 2 years when I was doxxed, so a lot of people already knew me as Andreas Johansson, and that's what everybody calls me online.
Yeah, so because I'm still confused, and I'm in the same movement as you, so...
Yes,
the Reds probably have some issues there.
Yeah, hopefully they do, because they do suck. So,
and when did you start the rate in Nordic Frontier? Was it 2016?
January 2017, we started the 17. First episode. Yeah.
Yeah, but you started organizing in 2016.
Yeah, I joined the movement in 2016, and I always wanted to do a podcast. I just didn't know what to do a podcast about. So when I joined the movement, I saw that there was like something missing on the international front. We didn't have like an English website. We didn't have an English podcast. We weren't really reaching out internationally. So I wanted to start the podcast and, you know, talk to a lot of people that I listen to on other podcasts. So I started inviting people and having a lot of guests and discussions with a lot of people.
Yeah, it was a pretty big step starting a podcast after just 1 year of being organized.
Yeah, it was.
Are you sure that you were like ideologically prepared or?
I was. Ideologically, I haven't changed actually one millimeter in 10 years, so that wasn't the problem. The problem that I discovered was there's two problems with podcasting, especially for the movement. But the first problem is you have to have content every week, so you have to have something that you want to talk about every week without stop. So having a podcast with the movement, there's always news with the movement. And there's always news with Sweden and the North, and also in general internationally. And we would discuss these things from a national socialist point of view, but also inviting guests. So like every other week or something like that, I had a guest. So there was always content for the podcast. The other problem was, which was the hurdle, was I now had to represent the movement all of a sudden. I became like an international representative of the movement, and that was hard because that I wasn't prepared for that. I had to know what to answer when people ask questions about the movement all the time, things like that. And that took a while before I got comfortable actually doing that.
Yeah, because even me, who's been in the movement for a while, when you like listen to more higher ups or the people who have been like spokesmen and so on, even if you're ideologically the same, they probably like say things in a different manner.
Yeah, this...
like in a nicer manner. They have like a different, they can have a different perspective on like propaganda and how things sound and so on.
Yeah, you develop like talking points and habits of it becomes like a reflex. When you get, especially certain questions about the movement that you always get, then you get like your packaged answer that you can give.
Yeah. So the movement started like in 2015-16 as a growing movement, the Nordic Resistance Movement, with no like international reach. or media. And now we're pretty much at the same state.
Yeah.
Not really.
Exactly. There's been a lot of platforming over the years.
Yeah.
Up and down. And I mean, the pressure has been insanely intense. I gotta say that over these 10 years. Like, I don't think any other movement that's still around. You know, a lot of movements have come and gone in these 10 years. So none of the movements that are still around and are still like ideologically pure and not bought out by Jews, they, you know, they didn't survive this kind of pressure. And it's economical pressure. It's like personal pressure, all kinds of things that the system is putting in against you. And, you know, you might think that running a podcast is just like talking into a microphone and recording it. But, you know, when you're constantly trying to stay online and you also have people, you get like negative attention from the leftist side and all kinds of other things. Mm. You have to keep going, you know. And I feel like for me, I haven't had that super harsh consequences for my political engagement like other people have, but still, I'm still around, you know, yeah. After all those things.
Yeah. So. Yeah. The censorship is real extreme. It's like, in the morning of a specific day, it's like you're having a speech in front of a classroom of 50 people. And then after lunch, there's only like four left.
Mm.
They all just disappeared
from
one part of the day to another, or like from one week to another. It's like you can sit like 2016 and like feel that you're speaking to the masses, and you at every instance you get hold of new people.
Mm, exactly.
And then you can have like years where you speak to the same 10 people again and over again, over again.
Yeah.
How big was Nordic Frontier? It was pretty huge, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had some big episodes, definitely. And it's hard to say because of the deplatforming, we never had a good platform where we could measure all of our statistics.
But you had like thousands of subscribers at least.
Yeah, I had on Odyssey, we had 3,000, I think, when we got banned. Mm. And we had about 5,000 listeners there every week, and a little bit on Rumble. And then we also host the podcast ourselves on our own servers, and we don't have any statistics on the listens on those episodes. And I also posted it on Telegram, both the video version and the MP3. So a lot of manual labor, but the podcast went out on a lot of platforms despite the censorship.
But I must say that you had a good run, because I still like come in contact with your talking points. I can hear them from like English speaking people even today. It's like you did good work. The propaganda you did for the movement and your episodes, they are like they are still in people's minds in some way, even though they are.
Yeah, every now and then. Every now and then you come across like a random guy on Telegram that asks, where's Nordic Frontier, or where did Andreas go, or something like that.
Yeah. And you just direct them to, hey, buddy, it's the new...
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, Frontier. Because that's actually successful.
Yeah, compared to Nordic Frontier.
Yeah.
Yeah, no...
No, but compared to a lot of people, like, you have more followers on... X than a lot of nationalist guys.
Yeah, and I always felt like I could do it. That's what I'm so bitter about, all these years that we have been struggling to just reach normal people, you know, because our message is not, I don't want to say extreme. It's not extreme, it's radical, okay? So we have a radical message with National Socialism, because we want to radically change how things are in society. But it's not extreme, it's not super violent, it's not evil, you know. So we want to reach normal people with our message, and we're just not allowed to do that. So when Nordic Frontier finally ended, then I decided to just go all in on Hey Buddy, which is the point of Hey Buddy is to just reach as many white people as possible, you know, with whatever I can say, like the simplest meme that I can reach, like sow seeds in all these white people so that they can stop having white guilt. Because I feel like that's the first step. And all these years we've been banned off X. I've had almost 30 accounts on X by now. It's crazy. In 10 years.
Yeah.
So if I could have just kept my first account, you know, like Ben Shapiro, he kept his first account. For some reason, he's allowed to be on X and just keep his first account. And, you know, Tommy Robinson, he has his first account as well. People like that, they can just have accounts from 2009 and just go with it. So, and I've seen so many other brilliant X accounts disappear over the years, like Racial Consciousness, Nature and Race. Do you know about him?
No. I think I know.
He's got some real like classic bangers that people, like screenshots that people still share around. Like he had 170,000 followers when he was banned, because like he's a really hardened National Socialist and was just posting about Hitler and National Socialism and went viral. And some Jewess saw him in her For You feed and decided to get him banned. But just one example of thousands of our people that could have been the biggest names on all these platforms.
Yeah. Another example I was thinking of, he wasn't, I don't really think he was on our side. I'm not really that knowledgeable about him, but that's Stefan Molyneux.
Yeah, he's back. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I mean, he maybe is back, but he's the censorship he was. They got him was pretty extreme.
Yeah, so what happened to him was that he was getting too adjacent to the alt-right, you know, because he talked about race and IQ there for a while. And people were just trying to red pill him on the Jews constantly in his comment sections. And he was getting more and more maybe radical in his shows. And at some point, he just got the same treatment that the most evil Nazis got online. Like he lost his YouTube, he lost his PayPal, he lost his Patreon, all that kind of stuff, all the mainstream payment services and platforms. And he was relegated to Odyssey like the rest of us. And he kind of gave up and just did his like anti-women psychology that he does. And now when he's back on X, that's basically all he does, just shitting on women. So it's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, but how did you like succeed in getting out of the ban circle?
I don't know.
Was it changing from your name to Hey Buddy or?
No, the thing about it is I don't break terms of service. I know that doesn't matter for a lot of people, especially in our circles, but I never break terms of service. I know what I'm allowed to post, and I know when I'm on the edge of what's allowed.
Is it more logical than Swedish hate speech laws or?
Almost, but I mean, you're not allowed to deny the Holocaust on X, but you're not allowed to deny the Holocaust in Sweden anyway, so I don't. I just choose to believe.
Yeah, but in Sweden, you can't say, like, black people are disgusting.
No, and I don't. Right? Yeah, and I don't say that on X either.
Okay.
You're not allowed you're literally not allowed to do that. It's in the terms of service. You're not allowed to speak, like, denigrating to, it's hate speech. You know, you're not allowed to speak negatively. You're not allowed
speaking positively about like Hitler and National Socialism, so on.
Yeah, that's basically celebrating the Holocaust. Okay. So, and that's the thing. Yeah. Like, obviously, a lot of people are doing this, and a lot of people are doing this on Instagram as well. So it's like a chosen selection of people that get to do it, but they get banned on X all the time. Like people that I follow get banned on X all the time and they just create new accounts. So you can succeed posting about Hitler, but you might as well just get banned, basically.
I did some advanced research here while you were talking, and Ben Shapiro has 8 million followers and gets like 1,000, max 1,000 likes, but usually it's like 400, 500, 600.
Yeah.
While you have 20,000 and you get more or at least the same amount.
Yeah, but I'm also throttled. It's crazy how accounts like mine are like subdued. Well, they call it throttled when you're not, I'm literally not reaching my own followers.
No.
Like I have almost 20,000 followers and I get like 3,000 views on a new video. And I'm like, what am I paying for? Why am I even on this fucking platform when I'm gaining all these followers, but they don't get to see my videos? And people in my comments are always saying, I never see you in my feed anymore. So what's the point of this platform? Yeah, to push Zionist bullshit, because I see that all the time. Like the anti-Muslim pro-Zionist bullshit and just slop, a lot of slop. Rage, like race rage bait. Black people that beat up white people. That's what you get from people that I don't even follow. I get that all the time. So that is frustrating that it's still being controlled, even though you're allowed to be on the platform. You're allowed to post your stuff, but you're not reaching what you should have been reaching.
I usually just use X when like something very specific happens, like Salem or the thing in Australia and so on. Mm. But other than that, I don't really like X. First and foremost, I've been banned for like 5-6 times for retweets. And it just feels like it's a bit of a Zionist hellhole.
Mm.
It's like a demon that you can't control. It just spits out shit. And then it has good things, but it's just to tempt you to use it more.
Yeah.
Into this like deep hole. But if you're doing it like you do, like strictly and have a good, like good propaganda and a good slogan, then it's positive. But I feel like a lot of these like big X users, first and foremost, you don't really know if they're Indian or not.
No, exactly.
Especially if they're anonymous. And then it just feels like they can spread a lot of like propaganda, but it doesn't reach anywhere. It doesn't reach to any organization. And that's because I've heard people say that if you're not in an organization, it's easier to stay on X. If you're in an organization, it's much harder, because then the propaganda has like a purpose. It has a goal where it's supposed to be led. And it's like the Jews created like this containment zone.
Yeah.
For like white people. Like you can play here and the big boys can like run our countries.
Goyim Digital Colosseum.
Yeah, it's just to come online and argue with other white people, basically, and then have some Ajits coming in trying to ban you.
But I mean, X, it did change a bit after Musk came into power, right? So has the throttling got worse, or has it just always been like that? Because you said you had 20,000 followers. So,
Yeah, the thing about it is I created an account on the day when he took over X. I was so excited because the first thing that happened when he took over was that Hitler was trending. And I was like, oh yeah, let's go. I created a new account and I was just posting about Hitler over and over again and getting insane feedback, like a lot of likes, a lot of new followers. And then I got banned like a few months later. And I'm like, and all of us, like the entire Nordic resistance movement, Nordfront, all the guys that were there in their real names or were known who they were behind the accounts.
Yeah.
And I have guys that all they did, they were on X just reposting shit, like Lucas was saying. They weren't even like actively creating content. They were banned as well. So something happened there where they just swooped everybody. And then they did the same to Patriotic Alternative, and they did the same to the NJP in America. So like Lucas was talking about, if you have a pro-white organization and you're trying to recruit people and you're trying to create influence, that's not allowed because that's real power.
Yeah.
But you can go viral and say shit about N-words, you know, because that's not going to have any influence. People is
for Indians who post pictures of white women and say that they're beautiful and so on.
Yeah,
shit like that you see often. So
you know, with a European statue avatar, Arno Brecker, nice. Yeah, yeah. So I would say that the it's different on X, but is it better? It feels more deceptive, and it feels like the MAGA poison. Mm-hmm. You know, like. There's something behind this so-called freedom that we have. And also that Elon Musk is just posting about how much freedom of speech they have on X all the time. Like every day he's got a new tweet about it, but people are getting banned every day. Like people with thousands of followers are getting banned. Like Joel Davis, for example. That's another example. The Australian organization that is now White Australia Party. They were all banned. Thomas Kuhl, Joel Davis.
And that mongoloid Musk was, he was complaining about Sam Melia not having freedom of speech while he had him banned on his own fucking platform.
Yeah. So Sam Melia went to prison for designing some stickers in England. And Elon Musk was super upset about that. But at the same time, Sam Melia was banned from his own platform. Like, that's disgusting. And people are in his comments with very big comments, like a lot of likes on their comments, saying this exact thing to him over and over again. So it's not like he's not aware. So, yeah, I find that stuff really gross and, like, deceptive.
But it's as they say, didn't they say something in the range of like freedom of speech, but not freedom of reach.
Yeah.
And that's exactly as the Swedish government thinks. It's like when people complain at the Swedish government for having pretty big rights for organizations and freedom of speech in some ways, they say that they can say what they want, but their opinions won't really spread. We have hate speech, we have censorship, and so on. The Swedish society is like Twitter in some
ways. Exactly. And it's just like the Nordic resistance movement back in 2016-17 when we were organizing big demonstrations. And I've said this on my podcast before, but I think in 2016, when we organized a demonstration to close the borders and start the repatriation, and we had over 700 people attending on our own demonstration, marching with us, with our message. Mm. I think the Swedish government shat themselves. They were like, Jesus Christ, we can't let this grow. We have to shut it down. And what they did was they took away our bank accounts. The first thing that they did several times, they closed down our business. We had business accounts trying to sell things, so we're not allowed to do that. We were getting so many donations. So much money was rolling in because people really believed in our newly created political party and the movement.
Yeah.
And we were able to like grow like crazy. So in 2017, our goal was to have a demonstration with over 1,000 people. And that's when they put down the hammer with the laws that we weren't allowed to march in pace. We weren't allowed to wear uniforms. We weren't allowed to shout slogans, all these ridiculous things. And then they invited the Robert Singer. What was he, the head of?
World Jewish Congress.
Thank you. He came around and said that, you know, you can't have Swedish National Socialist marching on the streets. You understand that, don't you? It's too close to the synagogue.
Were these Jews like parliamentarily elected in Sweden?
Yeah, it was democratic.
So we voted for them to come to our country and decide over us. Yeah.
Yeah, he just got an audience with our migration minister. Like overnight, he was like calling him up. Yeah. We got to sit down and talk about this. And then like 1 week later, basically, the whole demonstration was kaput. They just put all the sticks in the wheels that they could. So, yeah, and that's to your point then, that you can do whatever you want, but as soon as you start growing and start having influence, they will just crush you. you know, whatever they find.
Mm.
So that's what you have to be resilient against.
Yeah, I still remember like 2015, 16, 17. I'm born 2000, so I was like 15 to 17 years old. And I still remember like when the live stream started on the big demonstrations, it's like the whole of Sweden just shut down. It was on the news all the time. It was in like Lilla Aktuellt and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like the new show for children. And on YouTube, you have like this trending bar. And it was on trending. And it was, it was the cultural relevance was, it was extreme. Maybe I'm a bit nostalgic when looking back at it, but it's it really was in that manner. And the thing is that it's not as if we've gotten like worse. It's not that we've changed views or we're doing something different. We've gotten hit by the system, but we're still the same people, everyone involved. So if we didn't get the censorship as like all the right-wing influencers in Sweden get, we would be back. And
That's kind of what I'm waiting for. I'm looking for a gap to get past this, because I feel like we just need to hold on. We need to be strong. We need to, you know, believe in our convictions and understand that we are right. What we're doing is the right thing, and we have to keep doing it until we can gather the strength and the knowledge to be able to take the next step. Because we have been stagnant now for a very long time because of this ghettoization online, and now also with the terror label, a terrorist label that they put on us, and have disabled some of our leadership because of that. And obviously bank accounts is out of the question.
I like the international reach.
Yeah, that too. Like, for example, Americans are nervous about talking to us nowadays, because we are designated a foreign terrorist organization, and that's understandable. I mean, that's not, terrorist laws are not to be joked with. So that's why they use them. It's literally the last resort for them, is to call someone a terrorist, because when you're a terrorist, you're dehumanized. Like, the organization is dehumanized, but you as a person, as a member, as an active member of the movement, is basically a terrorist. So they can do whatever they want with you. Even though you have broken no law, they can still just call you a criminal. So that's the weapon that they use against us.
One thing you said there about like waiting for an opportunity, and two times in the recent years where I've seen like a tear in this wall of this censorship. One time was when there was a media storm regarding some people from the Nordic Resistance Movement talking positively about killing Gunnar Strömmer, a minister, and Salem. Because both these times when the media storm happened, like all comments by regular Swedes on all social medias were like mostly positive.
Yeah.
More so in Salem. But even that thing about wanting to kill Gunnar Strömmer or talking positively about it, people were just shitting at the media. And especially now in Salem, like everyone attacked the lying media and the state, almost everyone, and the left, even like Sweden Democrats and Zionists and so on. Even though they love Jews more than everything else, it's like we pulled them a bit away from the Jews and towards wanting to like having a memorial for Daniel Wretström and so on. It's like we got them to walk a bit away from Jews and towards Swedes.
It's a very sympathetic cause. I mean, it's only the most disgusting journalists that have gone out there and decried this thing as something horrible, to remember this boy that was slaughtered by foreigners. But it's interesting that Al Jazeera documentary or report, whatever it was, TikTok clip that went crazy viral. Like he was obviously a shit lib, you know. He was like, oh my god, this is horrible, Nazis gathered. But the comments are like, fuck, this is awesome. So
and the ones who were negative were like 15-year-old girls.
Yeah.
But you could see at the comments, the ones who were negative were that they hadn't come in contact with like nationalism, real nationalism before.
No.
It really felt that this was like a new group of people that haven't been reached before.
Yeah, and that's cool. I mean, because nothing bad happened. It was literally a flawless manifestation. So no violence, nothing got out of hand. It looked good.
Because sometimes when the censorship is so hard, sometimes I can get like a small train of thought that's like that something in the manner of, is National Socialism, is nationalism really a good product? Is it really a product that people want, that they like? Is it a brand that works, that sells?
Yeah.
And when the censorship is so hard, you sometimes get the thought that, you really question that maybe in 1945 the people don't really want this anymore. But when you see like the tears in the censorship and we just get to talk to regular people or it gets out in the public in some way, you really get the feeling back that this is what the people want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but you have to look at like the propaganda, because if we like count how many millions of dollars in propaganda have they spent since 45 in like trying to talk our people into doing something they don't want to do, and how much resources do we have? It's like, it's like 0.2% or something.
It's literally like, it's literally anti-whitism for 80 years that they have built up. And as soon as they, because we get it everywhere. We get it in the movies. We get it in the commercials. We get it in the newspapers. Now we're getting it on TikTok. We're getting it on all the social media because all of our opinions are banned. So if they would just stop for a week, it would be over. Like, they have to keep doing this, because as soon as something gets lit in white people's mind, it's game over, basically.
Yeah,
but it's true that that thing, like, I do that all the time. I question myself ideologically, and I use National Socialism as a framework to see, is this good, you know? Because when I talk about National Socialism, I'm talking about race first, basically. My principle is always folk first. So if something happens, I think about, is this good for my people? Is this good for my family? Is this good for my village? Is this good for Sweden? Those kinds of things. And when I think about what people would want, like you're talking about, Sweden is now a multicultural shithole. So you might think that, well, they might not want to go back to 1960s Sweden anymore, because, you know, we've changed and now people, they like this new Sweden. But they don't. That's the thing. As soon as they get a whiff of an ethnically pure Swedish place in Sweden, they're instantly at peace. You know, they're calm. They know that things aren't going to get stolen. No one's going to get raped. It's just going to be a nice time. And I always see, I don't know if you go camping at all, but if you go to a Swedish campsite, there's usually very few racial strangers. There might be the odd one. They like to live in a tent.
It's like 15% Germans, rest are Swedes, and maybe Norwegians.
And these are like mini societies, because you have the amenities in a campsite that everyone gets to use and everyone takes care of. You're supposed to clean after yourself. You might have left something in there, but when you get back, oh, it's still there because no one was there to steal it. Those kinds of things, like these small things that we just can't have anymore. Like in any big city, you can't think like this. You always have to look over your shoulder. You can never relax around blacks, all that kind of stuff. People don't want that. Swedish people don't want that. They might pretend like they don't want that because they don't want to be called racist. But Swedish people, Norwegian people, Danish people, we just want to live among our own people. That's why National Socialism will always be relevant, because that's what it's about. It's about creating, like, National Socialism could take so many different shapes, but as long as the race comes first, then, you know, people are going to like it. That's what I think.
But everybody, like, when I think to my private life in Sweden, when I look at, like, my family and extended family and so on, most of them are, like, social democrats, teachers, some are even politicians and so on the wrong side. But all of them live in, like, the countryside, surrounded by white people.
Yeah.
And so on. But it's like, it's pretty interesting. But they have this thought in their mind that the multicultural society has already happened. It's like, and I used to say to them that, because people in my family can say stuff like, yeah, but we can't send them home now. They're already here. They have a life here and so on. And it's like, if they climb up a tree, I remember being a child, when I climbed up a tree, I always got down. I didn't have to, like, call the fire services or something to get me a ladder. It was just climb down.
Yeah. And
you had to jump sometimes. But
it's also the whole thing about, well, they're already established now. They have roots. They have children in Sweden. Yeah, but they have literally 1,000 years in Afghanistan. They can go back. They have very deep
roots. They are established in tax evasion.
Yeah. And also, I don't give a shit. This is our country. They can just go home.
Yeah.
No, just grab a shovel and dig up the roots.
Yeah. Put them in a
But people barrel. Shouldn't really underestimate how much a grown, like, an adult Swede can get away from multiculturalism. As long as you have a family, both work, have pretty good work, get a lot of money, or, like, a reasonable amount, you can just move to the countryside. And you can just, because even where I live, there's a lot of, we probably have, like, 20-30% of the adult population are non-European. In some of the schools, it's like 50. But I remember when I became an adult, it's almost as I got de-radicalized, because I didn't meet racial strangers in the same way. And people can just move away. Where people can't move away are the children and the young people. And that's what I see in my surrounding right now, a lot of young people coming to the movement and our thoughts and so on.
Yeah.
Because they can't
live in it every day. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we have the same problem here. I mean, I live in the forest for a reason.
You don't really have to be a Nazi. You can just live in your forest.
Yeah, yeah. I could. Because, I mean, my place of work, I don't have many foreigners there, and no foreigners that are causing any problems, at least. So I could just go to work, I could live here, and we'd be happy. The only time is if I have to go to Coop and buy something, you know, I might see a few foreigners.
Yeah.
But homeschooling,
Is banned, isn't it? So at some point, there's a weak link there.
So my children have to go to town then to school. And it's going to become more apparent for them, especially when they move up. Because when they're this age, my children are still in the small school. So they have, like, a village school that they go to.
Yeah. But
when they grow up, they have to go into the big school in town with everybody. With, like, I don't know, 500 students. And they're just going to mix it up there. And that's when they're going to really experience multiculturalism. But they also have, in our village school that they go to, they have, like, the mandatory 3 brown people for every class. They bust them in from the ghettos just to mix them into the Swedish gene pool. I don't know what, but it's disgusting to see, because they don't belong there. Like, they don't even live in the village, but they're getting bussed just so that the Swedishness will rub off on the foreigners.
Yeah. Yeah, I in where I live, we had a school, a central school that was had the biggest problem with racial strangers, and that school was year 1 to 6, so 7 years old to 12. But because it was so many black people there, they changed the years. So instead of being 1 to 6, 6 years, it was just 3 years, 1 to 3. And then the rest of the 3 years, they bust everyone out.
Yeah.
And spread them out like a virus, just boom.
Oh, jeez.
And then, like, people in my family, when their children were starting to go to school, they were always talking about, like, yeah, there's so much trouble in the schools now, and we have to talk to the teacher, and blah, 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 blah. Just, I sensed a few years ago that they were complaining more. And then I just asked them a few questions about it, and then I got to know that they started the busing. But, yeah. I really feel that it's the youth that has to solve this situation.
Yeah, but
the adult people have it too good.
But we are
get away.
We have an obligation to lead them. Like they are basically lost. They're being like violated by the multiracial shithole that they have to face with, and they don't know what's going on. Their teachers won't help them. Their parents won't help them. So we have to show them why this is happening and what we need to do to change it. So, yeah, a lot of them are going to come our way. They're going to become radicalized because of everyday life. But I feel like the early nationalist movement, like in the 90s, they didn't have any leaders. They didn't have any elders. They were young guys. They were really angry because of immigration. And they just lashed out in this skinhead culture, a lot of like white gang culture. But they didn't have the ideology. They didn't have the framework. And that's what we have to give the young guys that are coming.
But in a good, in a fanatic way, because these takes are also said by a lot of Swedish nationalists in quotas that want the youth to become de-radicalized or be less on the streets or be like more intellectual, you know, boring way. What we need to do is like transform their aggression to something aggressive but maybe more productive.
Yeah, it needs to be organized. That's the thing.
Yeah,
but whatever it is, it needs to be organized, and so that everyone is pulling in the same direction. That's why the ideology is important.
But that's actually happening right now in Sweden.
Yeah.
Both with Active Club getting better ties to the Nordic resistance movement. Like the recent demonstration, there were guys from the Nordic resistance movement who are like 35 years old, who walked with them, who talked to them, was at the demonstration. In a lot of places in Sweden, older guys from the Nordic resistance movement are recruiting younger people.
Yeah.
And you can really see it in the media and so on.
Yeah, and a lot of people were commenting who were there. You were obviously there. That there were a lot of young people. And the interesting thing about that is that it was much smaller than it used to be. When it was at its heyday, there were almost like 2,000 people, between 1,000 and 2,000 people. Yeah. Where are all these people today? Like these are almost boomers today. Where are they? Are they happy with the development of the last 20 years? You know, because I know a lot of them were contacted to get involved and stuff like that. Not a lot, but some of the bigger people. But
yeah, we really have like a missing demographic, and the demographic that's really missing, it's like the people who have disappeared are like 40 to 50 year old Swedish men who were in the nationalist movement before but have disappeared. But they have, some of them come back, but they come back in the way that we have like an 18 year old guy who applies to the Nordic resistance movement. And then when you look him up, someone says, I knew his dad, I knew his mom, and so on. So okay. We have a lot of that, that the old skinhead guys are actually...
Raising children that are racially aware. Yeah, exactly. That's pretty cool.
I've had like three cases with youngsters like 14, 15, 16, 17 who apply to the Nordic Resistance Movement. And then one of the first thing they say is that my dad was a skinhead.
Hmm. Yeah, that is good. That's cool.
Yeah, so that's something at least. But it's, But a lot of them don't even raise their children right. So yeah, you can really ponder on what they are doing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but a lot of like this wanting to have nationalism, it can become very ideological. But you can really just look at it at a grug type of way. It's just, we want cool things.
Yeah.
We want to be strong. We don't want to be like weak, and we don't want to have people. We don't want to feel shame. We just want to have something cool. And the system, they sense this. And that's where they create like gladios and right wing groups that maybe have this tougher appearance. Sweden is becoming a bit more militaristic in the coming NATO war against Russia, and so on. But when looking at these cool things,
they have to they have to gin up this fake patriotism for Sweden now and for NATO, so that we can defend ourselves against Putin and shit like that. So then they have to have influencers on these social medias that they're kind of Nazis, but, you know, they like Jews. they like the kosher alternatives every single time. And you're like, this doesn't sound right. You know, it's like we have Nazism at home and it's basically BAP.
And 5 years ago, they were like leftists.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
And it was, if you guys really are radical militaristic guys who want like a good society and you don't want to take shit from anyone anymore, because they can talk in those terms a bit. We don't want to take shit anymore. We want to be cool and so on.
Yeah.
But destroy the people who don't want you to be cool.
Hmm.
Like, instead of, they always reach to like, the Muslims, but even when they talk shit about the Muslims, it's not like they want to send everyone away. And they talk shit about Russia and so on, but they are never going to the root of the problem. They have like no historical sense. And I wanted to just say a thing about the Sweden Democrats, because I heard you said before that like Americans and so on, or like non-Swedish people can still ask you about the Sweden Democrats,
yeah,
like talk about them and so on, and that's horrific in my eyes.
But what about living in Sweden, radical right-wing government?
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, we've actually had in the area where I live, not exactly where I live, but in the area, we've had people who joined the movement whose like brother was sitting in the municipality for Sweden Democrats, or had a husband or had a wife.
Yeah.
We've had stuff like that. So absolutely, some of them. But the amount of power that they have is like the amount of power that I have over SOG. It's like the same.
Yeah.
It's like zero. And the Sweden Democrats are getting really bad. I had a discussion with a 24-year-old Sweden Democrat who was in the municipality in like southwestern Sweden. And he was like seriously talking about Israel being like the only democracy in the Middle East and so on.
Yeah.
And what I'm getting a bit mad at also is that we have like these right-wing influencers in Sweden that aren't censored in the way that we are, but they talk about ethnicity and then they mingle and have social interaction with Sweden Democrats. And it's the same as in the US. It's like we have our like pseudo MAGA movement, and yeah,
but it's even more gay. That's
It's even more gay because Sweden Democrats in Sweden actually have to, like, they often talk shit about Trump, and not in like good, from a good perspective, but from a weak perspective.
Exactly, from a liberal perspective. That, oh my God, he's such a racist. We can't have anything to do with Trump. Yeah, the reputation of the Sweden Democrats precedes them all the time. Like, people think that they are so radical and that they're going to close the border and send people home, when in reality, they're just trying to figure out a way to make it seem like they are doing that, but not actually doing it. It seems to be like they literally have meetings when they're discussing, like, so using this shitty framework that we have with the EU that's forcing us to take in hundreds of thousands of strangers every year, how can we make it seem like we're doing something? Yeah. Well, we're going to make, instead of having permanent residency, we're going to make them citizens. Yeah. That's the way. Then they become Swedish. Yes. Yeah. Open Swedishness. That's basically the latest trick that they have in the book now. So, yeah, they just complain about the integration, like always. Like, everybody in Sweden has now realized and are acknowledging that we have a problem with immigrants in Sweden. But you're not allowed to say, well, these people are not us. They're not Swedish. They don't belong here. They're also very violent, and we need to get rid of them. We can't just say that. We have to think of ways to integrate them better. That's the only framework you're allowed to, like, attack the immigrant question. We have to solve multiculturalism. But the thing about multiculturalism is, multiculturalism hasn't failed. It's working exactly as intended. It's intended to destroy white countries. And that's what it's doing. And the politicians are either pretending like they want to solve this, or they're just prolonging it long enough until the damage is irreversible. So that's what this...
And that's what I often say to people, that it's not... The situation is not so that we could have done anything different. The Swedish population couldn't have voted any different, because the propaganda was always there. The goal has always been the situation that we're in right now.
Yeah,
it's working exactly as intended.
Yeah.
So it's not like we had another way out. And when I held a speech in Salem, I said that the current government is an occupation government.
Yeah.
In the same way as in Germany or Japan. And then they can say, like, yeah, but Sweden was never, like, occupied. But it was occupied 45 in the way that if the Swedish people would have done anything against it, the US would do stuff about it. And so the occupation has happened. So it's not like, if you are occupied by a foreign force, which we are, by NATO and by the US, mm-hmm. by Zionists, it's not like that you can just vote and get a different result. If an occupier wants to make a change in your country, they will make it. And the only way to stop it is by force. And if you don't give them that force, it will never happen. It's just how an occupation has always worked in history.
This is just a childish, like, reasoning. Like, the difference between a vassal state and a state that's occupied with violence. If these people don't see us being occupied unless your prime minister has, like, a gun to his head at every decision.
It's so he's cartoonish. Taking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really has to be in their face. You have to have, like, Russian troops running around the streets for it to be occupation. You can't just have it.
Now we have American troops in Sweden.
Yeah, exactly. We have NATO, American troops.
And so now they have this DCA agreement where they're allowed to build bases inside Sweden.
Yeah, that reminded me. I saw some poll from Finland that the support for the USA or the trust in USA to protect us has like plummeted from, I don't remember the numbers, but it was something like 80 to 30%, something like that. But at the same time, the trust in NATO had gone up.
Oh,
so these stupid like don't realize that USA is NATO.
It's the same picture.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is crazy.
The Swedish government at this time of the year, they are sending out like letters to all young people who are going to become 18 soon for like the military conscription.
Mm.
So there's a lot of letters going out, and I think they sent it to 108,000 youngsters, and only 30,000 got accepted.
For
like in the initial stage.
Yeah, for the tests. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like for the tests.
It's 70, only like 5,000 to 7,000 that actually get.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe they could get up to like 10 now.
Yeah.
But it's like, compare that to the amount of Germans who fought in World War II compared to the population.
Yeah, exactly.
How are we going to like?
But it's also 50% women.
Yeah, exactly. It's 50%.
Germans had the highest mobilization. How do you say? Like the highest percentage of their mobilizations in per capita. Yeah, I became Piers Morgan there for a second.
Yeah,
yeah, but it's like if you have like 108 people fit, and yeah, there's women included, but yeah, they want women to die for SOG. So yeah, if we just count with 108, and then it initial state down to 30, and then down to like 7%. It's like, what are you going to do? Such a shit society.
Just send them to the Ukraine meat grinder. Send all of our fertile women, Swedish women, to the meat grinder and just have them mass murdered. I think that's a good idea.
I saw on the news that an 18-year-old girl got rejected from military conscription because when she was 14, she got diagnosed with anorexia, but she's healed now. And the doctor just said that if you had it one time, you still like have it in your brain. You still have the tendency for that. And if you're in physical stress, mental stress, and then you have to eat food that you don't choose, and you have to eat it very fast under stress, it won't work. And she was sitting in front of state media and like crying in some way. I really wanted to do this, but yeah, it's the same thing with Swedish girls getting into the police force right now.
Yeah,
there's an extreme amount. When I did like the military enlistment, I did it 5 years ago in our group of I think we were 30 people in our platoon. 30% were women. It was an absolute shit show.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it is. And the thing is about that, like, you've experienced it. I know we talked about it once, and it's no one talks about it in the mainstream, like in the media. There's no discussion about,
not even the Sweden Democrats who are so militaristic and hard, tough guys.
Exactly. No one's talking about how inappropriate it is to train women to fight in our wars, and also how it is, like, practically, how is it working in the field? How are these tiny women marching miles and miles, carrying their backpacks and their weapons? How is that working out for you? Well, it's not.
And who's going to be back home? We have a fertility rate of like 1.2 now, and then we have 30% racial foreigners.
Yeah.
So it's probably lower. So how are we going to fight a war? And it's the same at the same time as they are pushing women into the police force and into the military. They are having demonstrations on the street. They recently had one in my city, like a candle demonstration against men's violence against women.
Oh.
And it's like, if we have to protest against men hitting women in such a high rate that it's a problem for the society, that women in their homes can't defend themselves against men. If they are so physically weaker, why should they go into the military? yeah. or the police force. It's like
you know when Ivan comes with bombs and tanks, it just works. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, you just use your women intuition. Yeah, you're gonna solve that right out.
You get raped like 15 times and then you die.
Yeah, that's the thing about most soldiers. Don't have to worry about getting raped when they get captured, but
if,
women
unless
soldiers,
if you're captured by Israelis,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah, for sure. But
and then
yeah.
they get defended on TV.
So that's a whole new genre of horrific things that can happen to our women. Send them to war and get raped yeah. by Russians.
Yeah, but one thing that Stryker says is that Russia is winning against NATO, and I actually see it in the way that. If Sweden would actually try with men and with women, it wouldn't work.
No.
The society is too splintered. I can't... They can probably get like... They can get a part of the men because Swedish democratic men, they can probably be talked into doing anything.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But like the rest and the women and like the splintering, the like the lack of unity within the Swedish people,
yeah,
or like the people's living in Sweden is too much. It wouldn't work.
No, but it's like I'm thinking, what am I fighting for? You know, if I'm going to fight to the death, what am I fighting for in Sweden? And I think most people think that today, like most Swedish people, especially young people that we talked about. What is it that we're fighting for? If we win, what are we fighting for? This shithole that our politicians are, you know, forcing upon us.
Yeah, so but if people we have actually hope, think that they are fighting for Sweden, because I've talked to, or I can hear people from the countries I talk, and they can say stuff like, "Yeah, I'm a Swede living in the countryside with like my Swedish people." In the big cities, there's a bunch of all right, but we democratically chose to get them here, so that's okay. But if the Russians get into my town or my village with a lot of Swedish people, I will fight them back because that's bad.
Mm.
So it's like because the immigration was chosen democratically that it isn't an occupation, and then the Russian occupation actually is an occupation, and then you have to fight them because then when the Russians win, you have to pay taxes to them instead of SOG, and that's like bad. I don't know
exactly. Like, what borders are you fighting for? I mean, we don't have any borders, so what does it matter? So you need to have you need to have your people back. Basically, you need to have your country back before you have people willing to die for this project. So, and I see nationalists that are, you know, doing the whole anti-Russia takes as well, and that no matter what, we have to be prepared to defend Sweden. Well,
and they always say we. They always say we. Yeah. We have to defend. But Russia is doing sabotage against us. Who is us? Who are we?
Yeah,
they exactly. never define that. Never, no. never.
Sweden joined NATO. They're literally an enemy of Russia at this point. I didn't join NATO. So, who are we? I don't understand.
No, there is no fatherland and there is no we.
No.
I want off this ride.
No, but
if they're going to go do a suicide mission against the world's superpower with the world's gayest army, like, go ahead. I don't want to have any part of it.
If you just think about Malmö is majority non-white. Can we just go and fight in Malmö instead, right now? Can we just train?
But we chose to get them here, so yeah, we can't because
we can
that would be against.
Just go
democracy.
There and make a quick sandwich out of it.
And that's why you really have to have a different identity, and that's what's good about the Nordic Resistance Movement. That we have a different colors, a different flag. It's the same as NJP, getting away from the Americana, getting away from the Swedishness. Because, but then you can say that, yeah, but Swedishness is like, it has an ethnic dimension. The US and the Americana culture doesn't have an ethnic because these heritage Americans have been black and so on, some of them. But they've already, Swedishness is... it's ethnic, but there's really people, the state doesn't really see it that way. And if you talk, it's like they have destroyed the ethnic dimension in being Swedish. So yeah, I am really for getting new colors. A lot of people know what Swedes are, but the same people that are talking about the ethnic dimension in Swedes are the same people that talk shit about Russia from a we and us perspective.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But the thing is, the most important thing that we have is the purity of our blood. Like, if we don't have that, we have nothing. And as long as we have that, we are Swedish. So it doesn't matter what color our flag is. It doesn't matter what borders our country is.
Yeah.
We are Swedish and we are Norwegian. We are Danish. So in a united Nordic nation, for example, those ethnicities will still exist. And these people will still create the culture that they have created before. But if we let Malmö be Malmö and continue being Malmö, it's going to disappear. So that's what I'll fight for. That's if they're recruiting, I'll join.
Yeah. Does anyone have anything more they want to talk about?
Yeah, I want to talk about Christmas.
Go for it.
Yeah. I wanted to know, how do you hold Christmas in your house, Andreas? Do you have in my house we have something called a teasing elf, or a trellenisse, as they call it, and he comes, he sets up a little doorway in the corner of our house, and then he pulls pranks on the kids every evening, and it's a lot of fun. And then he leaves presents sometimes if the kids are good, and leave out some porridge or something. But leading up to Christmas, is there anything the Swedes do that's a bit fun?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a blasphemy when it comes to Christmas, because my family is half English, so we do a mix where in Sweden the tradition is to have Santa on Christmas Eve. So he comes, is it before dinner or is it after dinner?
I don't even remember,
but the tradition was to leave like the presents outside the house, and someone dressed up as Santa would come in with the sack and deliver the presents. And this kind of destroyed the illusion for a lot of children early, because you saw that this was just a person in a mask, unless you had amazing imagination and was just fooling yourself for all these years. You would literally, discovered that Santa wasn't real very early. But the English tradition is to celebrate Christmas on Christmas Day. On Christmas morning is when you open your presents. And then Santa has been overnight when you were asleep. Santa just came and magicked the presents under the tree, climbing through the chimney and all that kind of stuff.
That's smart.
So the illusion is much more powerful and it seems more real, I would say.
Yeah. Can I also say, I'm also I'm half English, and we hold the Danish Christmas now, but that thing where they the kids can wake up in the morning and play with all their presents the whole day, that's brilliant, because when you do it the 24th, it's normally like 11 in the evening.
Yes, they're really tired and
it's a bit hard on the kids, so there is something to it, the 25th, but
I really like it. And we also have Christmas dinner on Christmas Eve, like the Swedish Christmas dinner, because it's maxed out. It's like 98% meat, and it's a lot of food. And
what kind of meat is it?
Well, you got ham, you got meatballs, you got sausages, and you got a lot of different fish, and you have what's that called? Pate.
Surströmming.
You don't put surströmming on the table, but you put sill. You put herring, like pickled herring. You put
that in there.
Yeah, for sure.
Like raw stuff or what?
No, like pickled in a jar.
In a jar.
You know sill in Swedish?
Yeah. Sill. We eat that, but we eat it for we have a lot of Christmas lunches, right? Okay. So coming up to Christmas, we'll eat that. And then we need some schnapps because it tastes like crap. And then you need some beer after that because schnapps tastes terrible. But not on the day, for sure. But yeah, it's ham and duck for us.
Okay. Conservative on the meat.
Yeah.
No, I really like it because you have so much food that you eat the same dinner for like 3 days in a row. So, and you don't have to cook; you just heat it up slightly.
All the leftovers, yeah.
Yeah, so that's nice. But I like the English Christmas. It feels, but I also like the Swedish tradition of julklappar and Santa Claus because it seems more Nordic authentic. That it's basically a legend about an old man that walks around the village and hands out gifts to the children that he supposedly made himself in then what would become now the myth of Santa's workshop. But this idea that an old man visits all these homes and gives gifts to the children, I think is really nice. Then when it's more international, then it becomes a whole industry that Santa is magic on the North Pole and he rides the sleigh with the reindeer. Okay. Yeah.
Let's just get this clear.
Oh, it's Greenland. Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely Greenland.
Right. I thought it was Finland in Rovaniemi.
Finland? Okay.
They have Santa's village over there.
Okay.
That's just a tourist trap for Chinese and Japanese tourists.
Yeah, I was going to say. It's pretty cozy, actually. I've been there a few times.
Yeah.
So, that's Christmas. But
don't you have the dimension with when Santa comes to give out the presents? Like some kids might have been naughty, and then if the kid has just been naughty, he can get put in the sack and get taken away by Santa.
In the sack? Okay.
Yeah. I think that's like an old tradition from when it wasn't even Santa, but it was Julbok, and I don't know what it is in English.
Exactly. We've read about that guy.
So
there's something with coal, though, isn't there? Like you get a coal in the sack instead of a present. But I haven't heard of the children kidnapping.
I'm all for it, though. It sounds pretty good.
Yeah
maybe it's
those naughty shits. They need to...
need some discipline.
Yeah.
Sure. But I remember when I was little, we didn't have... Most of the time today, the Santa Clauses are just like the Coca-Cola Santa Claus.
Yeah, exactly.
But when I was a kid, the Santa Claus wasn't... He had like fur and more brown, dark clothing. He basically looked like a bit more scary without... looking like a horror character, but...
Santa Claus is just an analogy for Odin, you know. He is Father Time that goes around giving gifts to the children. So Coca-Cola and the Jews had to make him into this cartoon bullshit.
Yeah, it's actually ridiculous how commercialized it is now. In Denmark, like, we have the Halloween season now for like a month, and then you got Black Friday, and then as soon as that's done, then you get like 2 months of Christmas.
Yeah, and this is life under capitalism. This is what it is. Every holiday is just buying shit. That's what it's about. I really hate it. It's so disgusting. It's such an anti-culture to live in.
It's like when you talk about stuff like this, you see the hammer and sickle flash before your eyes.
You just want to seize the means of production.
and like stop everything.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What do they eat in Finland, by the way, for Christmas?
Pretty much the same thing as in Sweden, but we also have casseroles for some reason, like three different casseroles, like carrot, and I don't know the name of the other ones in English.
Yeah.
And you also don't colorize your ham. That's what I heard.
Colorize?
Yeah, in Sweden we have a red ham. And in Finland, you have like a gray, disgusting-looking ham. Well, we put something in the ham to make it red.
That's so Swedish, like trying to pretend something isn't reality when it is.
Exactly.
Like how you call like blåmögelost, like edelost. I don't know how to translate it in English.
It's just shitty cheese.
Yeah. But you call it like nice, happy stuff with rainbows. And then it's not like moldy cheese anymore.
No, it's delicious.
But no, I have never heard of coloring the ham.
What? We need to investigate this.
What about red sausages? Have you heard about that? That's a Danish specialty.
No.
In the hot dogs, we have
pølse.
That must be a staple of the Danish, like, Christmas food.
Yeah, we just get like a hot dog and,
and beer and cigarettes too.
Yeah, for sure.
It's Christmas time.
You know, the English, I don't know how much English food, Christmas food you get, Andreas, Swedish Andreas, but they got some good Christmas stuff as well. Like,
but they like basically just pudding. Have like a Sunday roast, but they put the stuffing with it.
Yeah, and Yorkshire puddings.
Yorkshire puddings, yeah.
Delicious, yeah.
So that's why I was disappointing, because we eat roast dinner quite often, like on Sundays.
Okay.
So Christmas dinner is just like having another roast. But the stuffing is pretty nice. It's very bready.
Yeah. Don't the English put like mint and chutney on everything?
When you're having lamb, you put mint on the lamb, I think it is.
Yeah, I have some bad memories from when I was in England.
Toothpaste for dinner. You're like,
I tried to eat like some sandwiches and a bit of everything, but everything had chutney and tasted like India. So thought like, I'll just have a steak, and then they brought out the thing with some fucking mint sauce.
Yeah,
which was even worse.
Yeah, that sounds like it. That's why they're known for their cuisine, the English. Yeah. That's why they had to import all those Indians so they could have curry instead. Now people won't notice. Yeah. It's worth all the stabbings and the rapings. This curry slop.
Yeah.
The woman that I'm living with said that in Norway the most like common food on Christmas food is pizza.
No, that's bullshit.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, the most common food is rib.
Rib?
Yeah.
Ribs? Like spare ribs?
Yeah, we have ribs.
Not spare ribs. It's just a rib. I don't know what the name is in Swedish, but maybe revben or something. I don't know.
Don't you have like pinnekjøtt also?
Yeah, we also have that. That's the second most common.
Pinnekjøtt is really good. It's like this really salty meat.
Mm.
Yeah, pinnekjøtt is really good.
Yeah, it's like extremely good. I actually thought that it would be like regular ribs, but it's one of the best meats I've actually tried. And the one I tried was like frozen for a year or something, just leftovers. So yeah, Norway has pretty good Christmas food.
Yeah, we also have this small sausage called sausiser or something.
So that's just some... It's just like a regular sausage, or does it have some...
No, they look kind of white.
Oh. Ah, okay. Then I think I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Siskon. Siskonkorv.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
A Swedish classic that nobody actually eats anymore, that's lutfisk.
Yeah, that's true.
That's not the
grandparents... Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're hanging it up to dry.
They have these massive racks in Iceland, I've seen, and it's quite expensive now. It's like a specialty, but they hang all the fish. It's quite cool to see. It's you can look some pictures on Google. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You got to hang that fish.
Yeah, that was all for me on Christmas, for sure.
Yeah.
It wasn't so bad in the speech in front of everyone in Salem, Lucas. Was it... Nervous, or was that the biggest?
No, I was pretty used to it. I've done it before, both in Gothenburg and in Stockholm, maybe. I don't know.
Okay,
I've done it a few times before. But
that's another thing that's quite important when it comes to political organizations. Just a simple thing is it's not. That's simple, actually, to hold a speech in front of 200 people. But
it's actually more, because it was 250 people in the demonstration.
Yeah.
And then random people had come to watch, and they were like 150.
Yeah.
So it was actually around 400. It's pretty big
amount. It's literally impossible when you have an open demonstration like that to count everybody. So usually when I go to a gathering like that, once it gets past 100 people around you, you literally have no idea. It could be 1,000. But yeah, that's good to hear that it was more than that. But you get the opportunity to come out of your comfort zone, so to speak, you know, because I'm a pretty comfortable guy. I'm not very extrovert around people. I'm, you know, quite a shy personality. But when you're in a political organization like this and you're doing public activism, it forces you to come out of your comfort zone and to basically grow as a person. And you get opportunities to hold speeches in front of hundreds of people. And to know what that's like, because a lot of people haven't done that in their lives, for sure. And it's very, and like Lucas says, if you've done it once, you can literally do it 100 times. Like if you were successful, obviously. if it was traumatizing, you might not want to do it again. But that's something that's happened to me, like both with the podcasting, but also speaking in front of a lot of people is not a problem for me anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you get better like reading the crowd and feeling the energy and things like that?
Yes. And also like just get comfortable in what you're going to say. Like I don't even need a script. Like I just know what I'm going to say. And if people love it, that's great. But if people don't react that much, as long as I deliver it as well as I can, like it doesn't really matter. I can't do it any differently. So, and that's how I feel about podcasting, because you usually don't get like live reaction when you're doing podcasts and live streams. You can get some smiling emojis in the chat, maybe. But you just hope that joke landed to someone.
Yeah.
You know?
When Hitler had his early run, speeches were really important.
It was
how you reached people, and podcasts have in some way replaced that.
It has.
It's sad in some ways, but it's better in some other, that you can maybe reach more and you can do it from the comfort of your home and so on. But
yeah.
You don't have just people influencing each other, right? Like you don't have you know, if you're watching a comedian and someone laughs, you know, the whole room might be cracking up, but it's not because just a joke. It's, you know, you're getting into the energy. It's like a football game. And so it's a bit sad in a way as well, right? But I know what you mean.
Yeah, but it's true how it's evolved now podcasting has kind of had its heyday, to be honest. And it's moved into shorter and shorter and shorter messages. But when Hitler was speaking, he could be standing there for hours. He could be there for 3-4 hours talking. And people were there standing, listening to what he had to say. And when he was coming to town, people stood out for hours waiting for him to arrive just so that they could get a good spot, you know, for the speech that he was going to deliver. So in a way, like a 3-hour podcast does the same thing, if it's good. I mean, a lot of podcasts have captured people's hearts, you know, and these podcasters have become influencers, influencing people's lives. But now I feel like you have to make it shorter and snappier all the time while still being as good, as timeless.
To meet the Zoomer attention span.
Yes, because the attention span is a real thing. Like it's terrible. And I'm not just talking about young people in schools. I'm talking about young men that are now coming into, you know, work life and studies. Like they can't handle it. Like they can't sit down and focus, because they've been destroyed by TikTok.
It's like when the resistance movement like edit clips from activism, and they do it like they maybe have the length be like 1 minute, 1.5.
It's too long.
People are like, what the fuck are you doing? It should be like 30 seconds max.
Max, and, that's why the Hey Buddies are 15 seconds.
but I actually like that. It's like you should either have like really short clips or you should have like 8-hour podcast like Horse Track. You shouldn't have things in between. You should have, it should be long or it should be really short.
Yeah, because, you know, War Strike is a meal. You know, the YouTube shorts and the TikToks, that's snacks that you're just snacking during the day. But the thing about the short message, so let's say that I talk to you for 15 seconds. It's literally two or three sentences that I'm going to say to you. There's so little to take away from my message so that what I say is what's going to stick in your head. Well, if you talk for 3 hours, there's so many different points, up and downs in the conversation, all that kind of stuff. That's not going to leave the same kind of concentrated impression, like a 10, 15 second clip. So that's something to think about when you're creating propaganda, is to keep your message concentrated. Like, don't let your audience be confused about what you're trying to say. So
Does anyone have anything more they want to talk about?
No, I've grilled you.
But it's fun talking to you in English, Andreas, or hearing you in English.
Because, yeah, it's my natural language. This is, I feel comfortable.
How cringe is it for you to listen to us in our shitty English? Like,
it's not cringe at all.
No, a little bit.
No, no, I never have problems with people's, you know, capacity. No,
I guess you hear it often enough.
Yeah.
But it could be worse.
And it's also charming, like, to have an accent, because I have a disgusting, like, fake Hollywood accent that I have adopted over the years. So it's charming to have a Swedish and a Finnish accent, actually.
Especially a Finnish accent. A Swedish accent in English sounds a bit like Stitch or something.
No, it depends.
At least women from the Stockholm area. But
yeah, not all accents are equal.
No, I feel like Swedish people that are putting on a British accent, that's literally the worst. Where they're, like, their words are like silk. That rubs me the wrong way. I don't know if you've heard that. But that's
there's one people. Like nationalist YouTuber who does that, a Swede. Erik Berglund, I think.
A few do it, actually, yes. Now that you say it, that's true.
But yeah, you should, Andreas, you should actually, Erik Berglund, he has a, if you listen to him speaking English, he has this perfect English accent, like a British accent. And
it's okay if you pull it off.
Good. Yeah, he actually does it really good.
Yeah, that's okay.
But I actually like the American accent more than the British one, or the dialect. But and that's pretty horrible to say.
Yeah, it is, because it's a bastardized English. Yeah.
What they've done. But I actually, if when it comes to like English dialects, I probably like the standard American dialect the most, then maybe the Southern. The Australian dialect is pretty charming. The British dialect, I don't really like
that much. I hate
the Australian. But that's maybe like the standard pronunciation.
I like the British accent. The Southern British accent is really nice because it's the cleanest form of English. Like, I don't know if you've met people from like the suburbs of London, they can hardly speak English. You can't even understand what they're saying.
Scouse is pretty cool.
It's disgusting. And then Scottish people, like, I never understand what Scottish people are talking about. And the interesting thing about that is English is their mother tongue, but they can't adapt their English. Like, I can try different accents and try to say the same word in different ways.
Isn't that in some way like a different language? Like if you speak the original Scots.
I'm not sure what that would be. But when they speak English, they have the Scottish accent, and it just sounds like farm equipment sounds. It's just I can't make anything out of it. And I tried because I knew a Scottish woman, and I was like, can you just try and just speak differently so I can understand you? I never understood anything she said, and my wife had to translate everything she said to me all the time.
Based.
It's fucking infuriating. So yeah, that's one for the Scots. You need to sort that out.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's actually pretty impressive that the English language, it's such a big language, and they've actually been able to keep it mutually intelligible between like Australians and British and Americans.
Yeah, you know, because what
you
I
just
found...
look at Swedes and Danes.
Yeah,
hardly understand each other.
Yeah, but what I find so fascinating with English is that the English, they went to America, they went to Australia, and the English language, I guess, went to the English went to South Africa as well. And they're all different accents of the same language. But not only that, they have regional dialects in their own countries. So they're regional Australian dialects. You have regional American dialects in the same language. It's literally thousands of dialects in the same language. It's pretty crazy. And they're like consistent as well with, you know, background and culture, history. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And that's only their colonization of Australia. Wasn't that like in the 19th century or something like that? So yeah, but it could be worse. If you look at like Sweden and Dalarna, Dalekalia, and the Lake Siljan, the southern part of the lake and the northern part of the lake they are like 1 hour of a car ride between the ends, 1-2 hours, and historically there have been like almost different languages spoken in the northern ends and the southern ends, hardly intelligible. When Swedish became, there were like Nordic dialects, East Nordic dialects. But when Swedish came in like the 16th century, 17th century, and so on, it faded them out and they don't really exist anymore.
Yeah, and you could think we have the same up here in the north. A lot of accents that or dialects that I can't understand.
Yeah,
even being from here, like hours from here, they speak like crazy Swedish, and they're kind of disappearing. And we're becoming, well, now we get blatta svenska as well, but that's another issue. But it's the it's being more centralized. You could call it like globalization inside Sweden.
Yeah,
but is that a good thing? Like, is that progress that we're learning to understand each other nationally?
I have thought about this because when I was young, I had a real, I had a love for like dialects and so on. Mm. I really liked to study like Swedish dialects and so on, and I was pretty sad that where I live right now, and just like 1 hour north of me, 2 hours north, they were basically speaking a different language, Nedansiljan Mål and so on. And it doesn't exist anymore,
no.
Just some words and so on. But it's actually pretty good, I think. It really makes it easier to unite the country. If we look at Germany actually has bigger dialects with more differences between them than Sweden has, and that's because they were divided into like small kingdoms and so on in a lot later in history than Sweden was. And but like the unified German language, it's based on like central dialects, and it's with that central created language that Hitler managed to like unite the whole people. Because Hitler, he came from the northern parts of Austria, but he had a dialect of like the Bavarian dialect. But if we compare that to the language that was spoken in the northern parts of Germany, like Plattdeutsch and so on, the original dialects, they have a hard time being able to understand each other. And as we know, the Protestants who voted more for Hitler lived in the northern parts. And if they had spoken different languages than Hitler, if they didn't have this standard language, Germany wouldn't be able to unite. So, and language is a really big part with all countries and so on. And that's, just look at English. We use English all the time. Yeah. It's English that gave us the ability to spread the propaganda of the Nordic resistance movement to all other countries and inspire other movements and so on. So I actually think languages should be united. If you want Folkgemeinschaft, if you want unity of the people, you need to like unite the language in some way. But you can have like dialects and make a fun thing about it. And maybe you should record dialects in books and so on. But the thing is that if you have this really cool dialect that you get all too patriotic over, it can hinder like your sense of community with racial comrades from another part of the country. But the thing is, what makes people think that this isn't good at all right now is because what's the language English that's uniting us right now is it's bad people trying to unite us for bad principles and for like this globalistic agenda. But if you had a uniting language that actually had a good purpose, it would be good. And this is how languages always have worked. Like look at Latin or Low German with the Hanseatic League. I think 1/3 of words in Swedish and the other Scandinavian countries are from German. If you look at the origin of Swedish words, a lot of are from German, and that's from the Hanseatic Leagues and so on. So we will always have a uniting language. It's just natural to do. We want bigger armies. We want bigger unity. And I think it would be pretty sad if we have this whole Nordic region of white people, but they are divided up into like 200 languages for each of their municipality. I think that would be pretty sad.
Yeah, for sure.
But you can do it in a good way. It's like in Sweden, when each like municipality or socken, as we call it, have their own like their own traditional clothes and so on.
Yeah.
Or they can eat their traditional food. The food in Scania in southern Sweden at the Christmas table isn't the same as in northern Sweden and so on.
Yeah, but if you just have the will, you can just preserve that stuff. You know?
Yeah, but you should do it in a good way. You shouldn't do it when it becomes too much. So it doesn't get... Because when the differences become too much, you can't unite. What if southern Swedes ate completely different food than the northern Swedes and spoke in a language where they both wouldn't understand each other? Then...
As they do.
Somewhat, yeah. But if it would be worse, then we wouldn't have like a country in the future.
Yeah, that's true.
Different countries. And we already have problems uniting people. Just the political climate in the Nordics is splintered into many different groups who all want different things. And if we all then speak different languages, it would be...
Yeah.
Yeah, but I actually like English. Sometimes I've been like, I felt bad for being relatively good at English because it feels like SOG has occupied my mind. But my English is used for good at least, so that's something.
Yeah. It's also what allows foreigners to come to Sweden so easily, right? It's an international language. So. They speak a dialect like you were very impressed with all those dialects, but a very special dialect of English, I think.
Yeah, but immigrants in Sweden are actually pretty good at learning Swedish. one group who isn't is like old immigrant women who just sit at home. They don't learn at all.
No. But
they learn Swedish at school, like the racial foreigners, but they learn a dialect. And I've met like third generation immigrants who still have a dialect, even though they're born in Sweden. And that's a good thing. Because there, the dialect separates us.
Aren't the reason they can learn Swedish so easily is because they have this unifying language with Swedes. They can both speak English, right? And then branch out into Swedish. Way,
I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, that's for another day.
But another thing that makes it easier for them to integrate is that we have a Jew World Order who spends billions and billions of kroner in integrating them and destroying our peoples. Even if in the future, if they even though they speak, let's say they speak perfect Swedish in the year 2100, if we say we don't want you here and kick them out, it doesn't matter what language they speak.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's the same in like the US. All the black people, they speak English, but they are still too different. In that case, the language doesn't matter. The racial aspect is too big.
Yeah, you're right.
Yes, does anybody have anything more they want to talk about or bring up?
No, not really.
No. Yes.
It was fun having you as a guest, Andreas.
Yeah, it was nice being here. Again. For sure.
So you don't only have to speak English on XN at home, but also on Nordisk Radio.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll get an invitation sometime in the future if you'll accept coming on one more time.
Yeah, I will for sure. It was really nice talking about the old ways and our organization.
Yeah, absolutely. Our listeners will hear from Radio Thule next month in January, probably at the end of the month, but we'll see. But yeah, that will be all. Thanks for listening and goodbye.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
Good night.